You're listening to an American Theater podcast. American Theater is published by Theater Communications Group. www.americantheater.org. Hello, and welcome to Off Script, American Theater's podcast for all things theatrical. I'm your associate editor, Deep Tran, and I'm sitting here with...
Rob Weiner-Kent. I'm the editor-in-chief.
And you're all probably wondering why I'm introducing this podcast instead of Rob. I like to call this episode our special public shaming episode of Off Script. And you'll see why when let's go around the table and see who's with us today.
Hi, this is Pun Bandu. I'm an actor and I'm also a member of the Asian American Performers Action Coalition, APAC.
Hi, I'm Angel Desai. I'm also a member of APAC, founding member, and I'm an actor and singer.
This is Ray Pamatmat. I am a playwright.
Just to give some context, if you have not been following the American Theater website for the past 2-3 weeks, the New York Gilbert and Sullivan Society announced a production of Mikado that was with... predominantly white actors dressed up as Japanese characters. And this caused quite a stir in the Asian American community, and they've since canceled the show, and they will be remounting the show with a new concept next year. In the meantime, they'll be doing Pirates of Penzance. And in reaction to this, I wrote a column called Keep Your Hands Off of My Kimono, White People, which had some really good response and some very negative response. And then HowlRound did a week-long series curated by Jacqueline Lawton, who also works with us here at TCG. And I believe Nelson Isubio wrote a really good column, as well as Desdemona Chiang. And am I missing anyone else?
It was Rahana Mirza and... wait, what was it? There's
Leah.
Oh, Nanako. Yeah, Victor Mao did an interview with Leah Nanako Winkler.
And those were a great selection of essays. We posted them on our Facebook page. And then this past Monday, Rob decided to add his voice to the mix with his piece, 6 Takeaways from the Mikado Yellow Face-Off. And this caused quite a stir as well, but for myriad of reasons, which I don't want to speak for anyone else. And so why don't I have Rob summarize what he was trying to say in his piece, and then we'll get into the reactions.
Sure. Thanks, Deep. I ventured into the debate because, you know, I came down on the side of those who think the Mikado shouldn't be done this way. But I'm someone who also is sort of a fan of the Mikado, not a huge super fan, but like I like it. I saw it years ago done by Jonathan Miller, the Jonathan Miller version where it's basically set in the 30s at a English club, and there's really nothing faux Japanese about it at all. And then I also thought it brought up a lot of other issues about doing old material that's problematic, and also how you cast that material. And so I laid out a few points in which I think I was trying to address the people who didn't get why it was a big deal. That was sort of my main audience. But it seemed to come off to a lot of people who were against the Mikado, who were against the yellow face version of Mikado, as if I was attacking them or talking down to them. And I think part of that was tone. I'm going to just say my basic idea is that for me, the problem with appropriation, cultural appropriation, which, white creators do, take pieces of other culture and just use it as a backdrop or prop. The main problem with that for me is when there's an imbalance. And there's not enough creators of other colors and other backgrounds creating work as well. I'm less interested in saying like who cannot do things than in getting more people in the room. When we do problematic works of the past, make sure that there's a diverse cast, although it's not a total panacea. By all means, let's move toward more parity with people of color, and underrepresented people in the room creating new works. I mean, rather than making it all about policing, like we can't do this, you can't do this. I mean, I think we shouldn't do the Mikado this way, but I'm open to other kinds of cultural exchange. If the exchange is equal, I mean, if it's more equal, if it's Kurosawa doing Shakespeare and Ping Chong adapting that for the Oregon Shakespeare stage or something, that to me is a fruitful kind of mix of appropriation. So that, I mean, If I just said that, maybe I wouldn't get in trouble. I don't know.
And Ray, you had a response to Rob's article that you posted on American Theater's Facebook page. And so do you want to summarize that for our audiences?
Yeah, well, you know, because at that point, by the time I got to the article, I think it had been up for a few hours or at least half a day at that point. And people had been posting it on their own. A lot of actors were posting it on their Facebook pages with a similar misunderstanding to the protesters, saying that this article supports their ability to play whatever part they want and to not have to be restricted to only playing white actors playing white parts. And so I went, so, you know, so I was reacting not just to the article, but actually to a lot of these other postings. And I went through the different points that Rob raised in the article and was like, this is how this is reading to me. You know, it was pretty personal I feel like a lot of people were having the same misreadings. And even now when I look at the article now and having seen like some of the other stuff that you've posted, I realize that there is this kind of, there's a tone to it that is very like, I think it's the lack of seriousness in the tone, but like, that, you know, it's the kind of thing that it's written as though you would say at a party. Do you know what I mean? Like, in a room full of people. And I think because everyone was on such high alert, it ended up sounding to the protesters and to people who support doing yellow face Mikados as though the issue weren't serious. And I think that's what ended up getting all over the web, is that all of these, you know, a lot of people who are fine with yellow face are like, yeah, see, it's not a big deal. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, and the protesters being like, you're not taking a very serious issue seriously.
Yeah, what I took issue with, Rob, was that I totally understood that it was well-intentioned, you know. And, you know, and in a way, I think it's valuable to have sort of a contrary perspective. And it's a very nuanced perspective, actually. That sort of offsets, you know, all of the other articles that have been written, you know, like Diep's article, for instance. But what I took issue with it is that, you know, you started out, Rob, saying, today that you wanted to take the perspective, or your audience was the people who might not necessarily, agree with the Asian perspective on this. And, what I felt you ultimately ended up doing, however, if that was your goal, I thought it was unsuccessful, because what I thought you ended up doing was validating, in a way, the perspective that it's sort of the ideal that I think many theater makers would ascribe to. You know, we want to believe that the best actor should get the role regardless of race, right. That let's live in a world where we can imagine, you know, that racism doesn't exist, and it's so devoid of the historical context,
right.
And the pain that yellowface causes to, you know, it's talking about things on a very theoretical level, and there's nothing wrong with that to a certain extent, because, you know, your comment that, hey, appropriation is no evil in itself. You know, we live in a postmodern society and we're going to borrow from different cultures. And what's so wrong with that? And that, you know, negates the experience of most Asians growing up in America who, you know, never see themselves in TV or books or film. And there's this invisibility around who we are. And, you know, and then the images that we do see of ourselves are images that have been crafted by those in the dominant culture,
right.
You know, and there's a long history of white people donning, you know, Asian makeup or Asian costumes and determining how mainstream society should view Asians when we don't have a voice in that paradigm.
Right.
And so to say that there's no evil in appropriation, you know, for someone to borrow someone's culture as if it was a Halloween costume, you know, and take on the characteristics of how they perceive Asians to be, there is evil in that, because that is exactly what contributes to our ongoing invisibility. You know, and the experience of that, you know, when that is okay, when that is normalized, when it's okay to get dressed up as a geisha for Halloween, you know, that those are the things that sort of leads kids to think it's okay to ching chong, you know, their Asian students. And, you know, we were all called the same name, you know, on the playground growing up. And so that, in a way, like, and you also say, you know, well, there is no real authenticity, you know, like, you know, Filipino actors play Japanese characters, right, and, you know, and for me, it's about, that's different. I mean, that's about believability. You know, I can believe that this Asian is playing an Asian character. I'm less likely to believe that, you know, this white person with, you know, with slanted eyes on purpose and, you know, like, or whatever, in Fu Manchu garb,
right,
is a three-dimensional character that, you know, that those representations take away my humanity. And it perpetuates this invisibility in society. And I think that is evil.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Just to jump in on that. Yeah. The invisibility and also just invisibility, cruelty, isolation, the shaming of the looking at as less than, all of those things. I just want to put those in there as well as the things that we experience. I also could tell, and maybe this is because I have, you know, been acquainted with you for a while, but I could tell that your intentions were actually trying to demonstrate that you were allied, you're an ally,
yeah, sure,
but that you also are thinking first about theater and first about what theater purports to do and what theater hopes to do. But as Pun was saying, we don't live in that actual world. And the argument gets made a lot of the time that we should be producing things and casting things and seeing things in that ideal, with that ideal lens.
Right.
But that isn't actually where we are. The playing field has not been level for a very long time. And so everything, I guess the thing that I was thinking as Pun was talking was about context.
Yeah. Sure.
It's always and only about context. When I read your article, I read it before I read everyone else's pieces.
Right.
And so I looked at it, and knowing you a little bit, I was like, yeah, I get where he's coming from. I don't agree with all of it. Yeah. I also think appropriation is extremely dangerous and damaging and painful and hurtful and all of those things.
Right.
Can be.
Yes.
And there were some other little things that I would argue with you on probably, but,
sure,
but I was like, yeah, I understand what he means, except that that doesn't exist. And then I was, and then I really, you know, because that's what we all are aiming for, but the context in which all of this happens is one in which it doesn't go both ways. There is no context in which we can say it's just as okay for white people to play Asian people as it is for Asian people to play white characters, because there has never been an equality,
right,
about that. So that's...
I also think it's useful, though, which I said in the Facebook comment, to like break down that appropriation is different from inspiration, and
yes,
appropriation itself is different from cultural appropriation. And a lot of the issues that the protesters are specifically addressing regard cultural appropriation, right? Because inspiration is just the idea that something causes you to express yourself, you know, that like something was so great that you're like, oh my God, it was so meaningful and beautiful to me. I'm going to express it in another way or in my way. Whereas appropriation is specifically taking something. It's stealing. Appropriation is stealing.
Sure.
Which is fine. Like in postmodern appropriation, you steal from the hegemonic structure in order to break it down. So like there are definitely positive ways to appropriate. But cultural appropriation specifically is the idea that you take something from someone else's culture, usually when there's a power imbalance, in order to oppress or damage or hurt them. You know, and that's the thing about the whole yellow face thing, or even this, you know, I sometimes want to break down the idea that Asians are invisible, because that's a feeling that we have, not a feeling that's outside of the Asian or Asian American community, because it's not invisibility, it's cultural appropriation, creating images of us that don't actually exist. And so it's like, so we feel invisible, but the reality is that, like, you know, people have replaced, you know, it's not seeing us. It's covering us up with something else.
Or seeing us in a certain way and having that be it.
Right.
So there's a great level of, there are a lot of assumptions that are made, a lot of ignorance that's created around, and it continues strangely. It's the year 2015. There's so much information available, and yet people really see what they want to see.
Right.
And so most of the stuff that is either created for us or about us by white people,
right,
it relies on stereotype, mm-hmm, and is very two-dimensional. And so, again, context. This is the context in which we are operating.
Yeah, I would just say, yeah, I mean, I agree. One point I take very much is that I had other people, Angel, who know me or are acquainted with me, I feel like it's a failure of my writing if people who don't know me can't understand what I'm saying, right, or don't understand the underlying motives. So I take that. I also think I arrive at the similar conclusion that Mikado and Yellowface is bad, and that in general, appropriation, done in the way you're talking about, in a colonial way, right, in an oppressive way, I think is demonstrably bad. I mean, because it not only does it have bad images, but it also, the people who, artists don't get a chance to represent themselves, both as authors and as players. I mean, both of those things are at work in the Mikado. You have a work that's really dated and basically could be described as racist. And then it's played, adding insult to injury, played in this way that's racist. And then there's along the continuum, a lot of other pieces where they're created with good intentions by white authors. I mean, you can say Rodgers and Hammerstein didn't intend bad things. Or Sondheim, Pacific Overtures. I mean, and then Asian Americans were in the room to help create those roles in some cases, not all of them, right? And this is not just about Asian Americans and these particular things, about a lot of underrepresented groups and the you know, someone brought West Side Story or Cape Man or Porgy and Bess. There's works that are, like, for me, cornerstones of the culture I grew up with, right? And American culture, but which have at their heart, like, appropriation, where they're a white author because that's the people who get the jobs, right? And I guess what I say, Pun, I want to apologize to you personally for that pain, because I arrive at that decision or at this conclusion in an intellectual way, because it's not directly affecting me. So I think it is a failure of empathy on my part to not go, oh, if I'm going to talk about this, I need to account for that, for the actual pain and oppression and silencing that happens, because of this. And then I can maybe talk about these musings I have about the larger context of, you know, appropriation and authenticity, all those things, which to me are relative and political. To me, I was trying to say with authenticity, there's no pure one culture. I mean, there isn't, but there's cultural divisions and cultural oppression that happens. And I think those are political issues. They're not necessarily absolute black and white issues, like literally black and white, but I think that if we ally ourselves politically to go, let's fight this kind of oppression together.
I really appreciate you saying that, Rob, because I think that is the perspective of most of, if anything, I don't want a bunch of Asians in a room talking, like, we shouldn't be preaching to the choir. You know, if anything, it's the people who still believe, it's all of those people who commented, I was like, it's the Mikado, it's a classic, you know, these Asians are just being too PC, and, you know, those are the people that we need to have a dialogue with, because I think that exactly what you were saying, that, you know, you as a white person don't have the experience of living as an Asian person, as a minority or whatever. And so it's very easy to, and I think it's probably where most white theater makers are, well-intentioned
yeah.
white theater makers are.
Right.
You know, I mean, you look at, you know, Randy Skinner, who's directing Dames at Sea, the revival on Broadway. And, you know, there's that one number, Singapore Sue,
yes.
And, very early on in preview, you know, here, he was a well-intentioned, you know, ally, someone that we've considered an ally who, you know, went out of his way to try to change some lyrics and take out the word Oriental. You know,
yeah.
he had that consciousness,
right.
You know, But then had, you know, a white actor in Fu Manchu garb. And,
right.
And then, you know, and the same thing that the same response, the first response from NIGASP was, the New York Gilbert and Sullivan Society, their first response, you know, to our outrage was, okay, we're not going to use makeup.
Yeah. Right.
You know, we'll just use the costumes. It's okay. We're not doing yellow face, you know? And so I think there really is this disconnect, this gap that I would love to try to bridge, because I'm really trying to, for us, it's sort of this monumental, like, oh my God, I can't believe that they don't know not to do that. But for most theater makers, I think they really do think that either yellow face is just the use of makeup or, or exactly what you said, that like, look, let's think about this in a intellectual, theoretical, you know, way devoid of emotion and historical context, you know. So I appreciate that, because that admission, that, I think is where a lot of people are at, and they need to hear that and need to hear how, what you're grappling with and how you're evolving on this issue.
Yeah, totally.
I'd like to add to that too, because thank you for saying that, because that the key word that you used was empathy. And the fact that you're doing this here today is fantastic, and thank you, because it's, and for you to say that is important. I'm going to jump on that with Pun, because that, I think, is the key element that is missing from so many of these comments from people. And I've had conversations with friends, white friends, about how much they love the Mikado and all of that. You know, so this is not, and I read the comments. Some of them are intelligent. Some of them are really completely blind.
Yeah.
and I just think, yes, but the key element you're all missing, and, you know, they are all missing, is empathy. Is just for a second thinking about what it might be like to look at what our, the history of all of our different peoples and cultures have been in this country.
Right.
And to then think, which is why I keep coming back to the word context, is like, just think about what that might feel like for us to be in that position. Before you say that we are being overreactive, and before you're saying that we shouldn't have a problem and there should, think to really, really, really take a second and not talk, and put themselves in our shoes for a second. And sometimes it's hard to see those shoes, because you'll see a successful Asian American writer or performer, and people, friends of mine, love to do this. Well, there's this show on television.
Yeah.
Well, there's that show on Broadway.
Yeah.
You've got that. And I'm like, right, because of the 585 shows that are out there, that one really should make us feel really good about the progress we've made in the last 100 years. You know, it boggles my mind that anyone would look at that and say, this is enough. This should be enough to make you shut up about these things that you are collectively feeling pain about. So I'm not lumping you in with that.
No,
but the fact that you are being the mouthpiece today is very important.
And I have a point, like, I wanted to ask about that, actually, because, and I've gone through this with many white and Asian performers. When it comes to modern works, such as, because we know Rodgers and Hammerstein and Mikado, we know those are iconoclastic, racially problematic works. We know that. But for creators making something right now, like Mary Zimmerman's, you know, the White Snake, or David Byrne's Here Lies Love, like white creators right now tackling Asian topics, like, where is that line between, like, appropriating something and just saying, I was inspired by this, and I put in an Asian in lead, so can I cast everyone else as different races?
I've had this issue sometimes when I'm teaching, where people are afraid to write characters of other race or of other gender or of sexuality different from theirs. And, you know, and I tell all, you know, especially, and this is in a classroom environment, of course, this is not out in the world, and I tell them, I'm like, really, you should write whatever you want. As long as when you put it in front of people, you're ready to be responsible for what you've done. And I think that that is, you know, I think it's with contemporary work, where we're trying out new things, I feel like that is the place where we go from. If you are not a person of color, and you do a work that is all people of color, and you cast all those people, and you have conversations, when someone comes up to you and says, this part is racist, you know, then it's you. We're in a different world. We're in a place where, despite the remnants of white supremacy, we are starting to come to a place where we agree that white supremacy is probably not the best way to go. And so, within that environment, that means there are going to be these challenges to that sense of supremacy. And the idea that we can talk about them in a way to keep breaking them down, I think, is very important. And so when white creators do create works with people of color and then are challenged, I think it's then the responsibility of everyone in that room to, like, accept that challenge and work it out. Mm-hmm. I think the difference with historical works is that we know that they come from a time of unchallenged white supremacy, and they have all of those things built in them. And when we're putting them up again, that means that we're deciding to recreate those things. And so that becomes the question. Why have we decided that it's very important right now to recreate ideas of colonialism? You know, like, that's, mm-hmm. it's a different context.
Mm-hmm. My response is, you know, I read this article a couple of days ago that talked about food, actually, in America, and how, you know, it's interesting that, like, Italian and German food is not considered ethnic food, but what we consider ethnic food is, you know, Mexican, Asian, right. Ethiopian, all the food of cultures with, like, darker colored skin. And that it's an interesting phenomenon that in recent years, there have been all these white chefs who are willing, like, you know, who are winning, like, you know, beard awards and stuff, like, because they are, they are cooking our food, you know, and suddenly now you can charge $14 for a plate of dumplings because it's now elevated cuisine. You know, and when a white person cooks our food, it's not ethnic food. It's modern. It's fusion. It's trendy. It's, you know, and so, it is a little problematic for me that I wish, you know, I wish that there were actually more, Asian, people who are allowed to be the writers and the producers and the directors, you know, to be able to create those works. That's not to say that, you know, it's a creative spirit. You can't squash it. You know, I'm certainly not for squelching artistic freedoms. And I think it's important to note too, for those who are not familiar with the whole Mikado scandal, that no one in the Asian community called for NIGASP to cancel this production.
Right.
We do not advocate censorship at all. But that being said, I think it's all about how you go about doing it. You know, whether it's, Mary Zimmerman, you know, creating a piece that's based on a Chinese fable, or whether it's, you know, Bart Scher, directing The King and I, you know, I think it's all about sort of, you know, about making sure that, voices are heard in the room, that you approach it with a sensitivity, and, you know, you tell a story that actually, empowers instead of degrades.
The key is something you said right at the beginning, which is who's in the room.
Right.
And to have, so the difference to, you know, you brought up, let's say, Here Lies Love as an example, David Byrne's piece on the Marcoses and that era in the Philippines and his take on it. I don't put that in the category of appropriation because he's like, this is a story that interests me. I want to tell it this way. And we're going to use an almost entirely Filipina cast to tell the story about Filipino people. So there's, you know, I don't know what his level of collaboration with actual Filipino people was in the room, but he clearly did a lot of research and the whole cast was Asian and, you know, so there's, who's in the room creating it? If you are going to touch on anything, people love to talk about the Mikado and say, people who know about it and they're like, listen guys, this is actually a satirical comment on British society. That's actually what the intention was. And it's like, yes, but he was using Japanese people to do it. All of their pieces have some satirical comment on something. And they're brilliant pieces. We're not going to argue that. But this is the one piece where you didn't have any actual Japanese people going, you know, maybe we should talk to them about this. And in fact, they hadn't even been to Japan.
Right, and he was inspired, you know, well, you know, they say he was inspired when he saw a bunch of captured Japanese people in a museum exhibit. I mean, you know, that's not the most great inspiration.
No, he was inspired by there were Japanese people people on display, right. Like as I think it was Desdemona who put it this way, as if they were in a zoo.
Right, right.
So again, context. It's like if you are creating a piece and you want to talk about a culture that you don't know, get some people from that culture and talk to them. That's handy guide for anyone out there listening.
I kind of love this idea that I could go to Epcot and
just
write a play about Norway based on that ride at Epcot.
I want to see that play.
I'll pay money for that. Yeah.
You also said something, Pun, about reaching out beyond the, you know, preaching beyond the converted. That is a big mission of mine, and something that I think this piece probably backfired, but it was an intention to reach out beyond the people who already agree that appropriation of this kind is bad to the people who the internet debate I hate is like on one side people saying you're PC police, and the other side saying you're racist, and like there's no, where's the dialogue in between? And there's a lot of smart dialogue in between, and we're trying to amplify that. I don't think my piece did a good job in.
I mean, it's really, you know, it seems like most theater makers have a level of consciousness now where they know that if it involves blackface, it's probably not a good idea to do it unless, you know, it's for satirical purposes or, again, you have a sensitivity around it and awareness of how the audience might view it. And not just the audience, but multiple types of audiences, even if there aren't any black people in the audience. How it might be seen, but somehow there's this disconnect where it's totally still okay to do yellow face. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would love I would love to hear from white people who believe that actually, and understand sort of like,
wait, who think it's okay?
Who want to defend it? You know, like why
seriously defend it, not just like be dicks about it.
Yeah.
a lot of people on our Facebook wall when we were posting up both of mine and Rob's article, they asked, well, I live in a town where there's not that many Asian actors, and if we wanted to do the King and I, like, how are we supposed to do that? It's a classic work.
You know, I've actually run into this problem with one of my plays where I ended up having a discussion with Samuel French, who publishes it, with Edith Can Shoot Things and Hit Them, because there were two school productions where they did the play with white actors. And, you know, they didn't ask for permission. None of that happened. And so I found pictures, I found a video for one of them, and I talked to Samuel French and my agent, and they were like, we're sorry, we had no idea, you know, like, if this happens, what do you want to tell people? I was like, tell them I don't want the money. Tell them they can't do it. And, like, if they want to talk to me, they can talk to me. Because I feel like, again, it's this thing where it's like, if you are, certainly in America, and it's not, whatever you want to say about geography, there are people of color pretty much everywhere in America right now. And the access that those people have to particular jobs or to universities or to theater programs is, you know, there are remnants of white supremacy, of colonialism. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, you can't find two Asian actors in your theater program, that just means you can't do my play. You know, it's like, you know, it's like work on figuring out how to get those actors into that program. Mm-hmm. How to get, you know, how the society, wherever you need to live, wherever you live, you know, whatever they need to do to get people into those jobs, into middle class communities, you know, living in the suburbs because they want to be there. Sometimes they already are there. And, I would prefer that people didn't do the play if they didn't have the actors.
But I just want to say that in this particular case, in this situation, it's not a situation where they couldn't find Asian actors. And in fact, right. That's sort of the question that I want to ask NIGASP actually is you heard about the controversy in Seattle, you know, a year ago. You couldn't, as a Gilbert and Sullivan Society, you could not have missed the controversy that came out in Seattle. And yet you decided to go ahead and produce the Mikado, in yellowface anyways, regardless. and not even try to find, you know, Asian actors into your company and stuff like that. So, you know, so it's, I think we're talking about two different things in a way, you know, like, but yes, to Ray's point, you can always find.
Yeah, well, but I mean, the thing is, you know, even within the nine DAS situation, you know, because they'll want to say we have to cast from this repertory company.
Right.
And then the question has to be, why do you make a repertory company in the middle of New York City that's predominantly white? You know, it's like you've created that company,
mm-hmm.
and you've sustained that company and you've maintained it into the year 2015.
Right.
So it's like, you know, and it's, you know, it's not that I think, you know, maybe they didn't question, you know.
And their last equity open call was like 3 years ago. So.
Right. Yeah. It could be completely unexamined and, you know, and that's what it is. But so now examine it. Like, why is this company this way?
Right. And so that's what I don't get is, where is the disconnect that white theater makers still feel like they are entitled or justified in some way, you know, whether they're well-intentioned or not to continue to do this. And it seems like, you know, one of the responses is that, well, it's a classic, you know, like you were saying,
sure.
You know, it wouldn't be good to, you know, to censor a classic, you know, and then we would lose out on all of this beautiful music. And then my response to that is, would you say that about a minstrel show that you really, really loved, you know, because there was like a couple of good hummable tunes in it, you know, like, would we preserve that? And then I look at, you know, a modern example of, you know, Disney had this animated movie, Songs of the South. I used to love it as a kid, you know, zippity-doo-dah, exactly. And they've decided, they've made the decision not to release it anymore, you know, because it normalizes slave relations as something that, you know, slaves were profiting from as well. And there was a character, you know, that was Tar Baby,
right.
You know, and that totally, like, takes it out of the context that African Americans were actually, that's how a lot of African Americans died.
Yeah.
You know, was being tarred and feathered and yet they're singing and laughing about it, you know? And so it's not that I'm about censorship, but it's like, if you have something like that, you know, then find a different way to present it. That doesn't perpetuate the racism and the pain.
Right. Right. This discussion about, find the actors to do it. I think that that's where the rubber hits the road. If we insist not only that somehow we hire more playwrights to create new work, but also once they've created the work, cast it right. Cast it with some attempt at authenticity and fill your repertory companies with a more diverse. I think that is the next step where white companies go, oh, well, yeah, we're going to do a play and then we'll have to find the people to do it. We'll do a play by that one play by a person of color, and then we'll find those people. But why not have them part of your company? Why not Steppenwolf has diversified his company? Other companies are realizing, well, actually, we can do classics with a diverse cast. Why don't we have them in our company? I mean, this has happened to Oregon Shakes. Oregon Shakes is a good example. They're also a repertory company, and they've had the challenges of now they're going to do diverse work. Are they going to cast it authentically, or are they going to just do sort of a multicultural, like, shuffle the deck? Doesn't really feel right to like have it just be multicultural when it's, you know, so they're grappling with that, and they have now, like, I think next season is going to be more than 50% people of color in their acting company. So I think companies can make a commitment to that, and there's still going to be these conversations. Not everything's going to work perfectly, but for them to be conscious of it, sensitive to it, that seems like the next step.
Yeah, and you get access to a lot more work, certainly a lot of contemporary work.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Right.
Just to go back to the handy guide that I'm designing here, which is something that Pun just said, which is, if you wouldn't do it to black people,
right.
Don't do it to us. If you think it's a, would you put on, if you're in, you know, somewhere where there's not a lot of black people, but you think we really need to see The Color Purple on stage with, would you do it? Probably not. Let's hope to God you wouldn't do it.
Right, right.
It applies to us. It applies to us.
Right.
Just know that this is how it is. And again, there is censorship. We can't, I mean, that's not, you know, that's not what the country's about. Certainly not what art should be about. But please, as Ray was saying, think first, ask yourself the question.
Right.
Stop and ask yourself the question. Why? Why and how?
Yeah.
And who's in the room?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not very often that American theater is a subject of controversy, so I wanted to thank all three of you for being here today. And Rob for taking the...
For his honesty,
yeah,
actually.
For his honesty,
I want to thank you for your honesty.
And for taking the comments critically to heart.
Great. Maybe we'll invite you to our panel, actually. We, APAC and a bunch of other groups like the Asian American, Arts Alliance, and also NYU, and the Asian Pacific Institute there, we are coming together to create a forum, exactly about this to try to understand where are the misunderstandings? And let's bridge this gap, so that this doesn't happen again. So that is going to be happening December 16th at the Skirball Center on NYU campus. And not sure exactly what time yet, but probably around 7:30. But so just want to make sure that people put that in your calendar.
Fantastic. Thank you all for coming. And tune in the next 2 weeks for another edition of OffScript. Bye.